last year's arrears, and they're going to pay in advance for the gas that they want. And they're going to pay that by year end. And the Russians said they will turn the taps on through March. So that's going to ease things for Europe. So that didn't get torpedoed. Then next up, I've got the this crazy thing, this spat between the British and the EU on the immigration battle is really heating up. Today, Merkel came out strong, and also the EU Commission, that they're going to hold firm on not having any restrictions on freedom of worker movement in the EU. And they say that's one of the prime things about the EU is people can move around and work wherever they want. And it really is a false argument, because Britain doesn't mind people coming to Britain and work if they've got a job. And here's where all of these highfalutin politicians, they're always lie about what the real issue is. It's not about the mobility. What they want to happen is they know, because Britain is English, Britain draws a lot of the foreign people that are out of work. And these European countries that are broke and they have high unemployment, they love to dump their unemployed off on some of these other countries who have higher support benefits. And once they get into the country, it's very difficult to get them out. So when all of the countries are suffering economically like they are, wages are stagnant, there's no jobs. I mean, if you're in Britain now and you're trying to find a job, good luck. And to think in these types of special situations that, you know, you're going to be able to have an unlimited number. I mean, people just decide themselves whether they want to get on a plane and fly to Britain and look for a job. And if they can't find one, they just put themselves on unemployment and get all these extra benefits, which are much, much higher in Britain or, say, Germany than they are in their own country. So they'll do anything if they don't have a job to get to these other countries where they can be unemployed, live well, better anyway, and send money back home. But Cameron is really caught in the pickle, because the third party is really, really anti-EU. And what he's been trying to tell the EU is we have to have some adjustments on these things before the election comes up, because he's got to pull votes away from that. He's being tough on the EU. And really what the Merkel, she kind of flipped him the bird today. She said she will not negotiate on the free movement. So it's really strange that they think when your economy's teetering, you've got all your budget strain, particularly your social budgets, and now they're thinking that you know, you're going to let waves of foreign people come in and make the situation even worse. You know, because somebody tells you that's breaking the rules if you don't do it. It's just nutty. It's going to be, this battle is going to be going on for quite a while, so we'll keep reporting on that. Next, I'm going to go to the Russian sanctions. I'll give myself a stroke on the back. The EU is now doing exactly what I predicted they would do. They're going to use the sanctions, and they specifically said today, the headline of the story was they're going to review the sanctions, but get into the story, they said they were either going to dial them back or increase them more, depending on how Russia acted during the resolution of East Ukraine. And the simple language of that is they're saying is you either go along to what we want to do there, and you know, forget the negotiations, because they obviously want to pile drive their own deal in there, because they do not want those two republics to be independent in terms of the use of their resources, because there's a lot of industry there. They've got the coal. That was one of the areas that the West wanted to exploit when Ukraine defaulted on its debts, which it actually eventually is going to do anyway. And they could have the fire sale and all the most nationals could go in there over a 5-year period. It may take them 5 more years to just own them up to the hilt, bankrupt them, and then they just bring all the multinationals in there, and they would just carve it up into a warlord country. But now this whole idea of the coal, like, in fact, today, just before I got on, the Luhansk and Donetsk people said, you know, we're open to start talking about opening up the coal mines and start shipping coal out to all the people that need coal. So everybody knows, the factories and whatever, that you've got your coal covered, you know, for the winter. Let's start talking. So they've got a standoff there. Of course, the republics need to sell the coal to get the money so they can put people to work and revise their economy. So everybody's kind of holding a gun on each other. But we've seen this stupidity with the EU. They're already threatening that they're going to keep the sanctions going. They may make them even worse, which is going to hurt the European out-of-work people even more. So what these elitists are saying, we don't care about them. There's not enough of them. We're here for 5 years. We can't be unelected. We don't care. So there's your, that's what's turning, trending now, is free democratic countries, that really don't give a crap. They'll let their own people suffer, by using them as pawns on a geopolitical, risk board game. So that's something we're going to be, keeping an eye on also. And then looking a little bit ahead here, we're finally coming up, and the news is going to start switching to this, the final stages of the Iran nuke talk. They meet again in Vienna on the 18th, and the Iranians have kind of put their red line that there's not going to be extensions. They don't want to drag it out even more. And kind of surprised why they didn't try to have two meetings, get one going right at the beginning of November and then have a second one. But it appears what they've been doing is having individual meetings. Like now, the U.S. and Iran have been having quite a few meetings, and it's really getting down to what's the U.S. and Iran going to negotiate. We know the Russians and the Chinese are fully backing Iran, have a peaceful nuclear program. But for political reasons, for what the U.S. has promised they were going to try to do for Saudi Arabia and for the Israelis, they have to have some compromises to show that they got a tough deal. So we don't know quite what they were going to do. We knew they were to try to restrict some of their traditional military, like their medium range missiles, to reduce them maybe from like 2,000 to 1,000. And that's something that just came out of the blue. The nuclear talks have never been about conventional weapons. But once they got into this thing, there was really no nuclear weapons program, they had to start replacing that. So they had to start just pulling out of their behinds, so that if Iran wouldn't go along with it, they could say, well, you know, Iran wouldn't agree to decrease their conventional military. And how in the hell can they decrease their conventional military? Because all they have is defensive, and they need about is every bit of defense they possibly can with what's being arrayed against them. Because they do, by the way, have a nuclear Saudi Arabia across the Persian Gulf on the other side over there. The media won't get that, but Saudi Arabia has been nuclear for some time. So Europe wants a nuke talks to be successful because they want to go in to Iran. They want to start building car companies there. They want to start investing in the energy project, so they're on board. But the U.S. is going to try to pull their tail. They're going to want to, and the other big issue is, they're going to want to like decrease the sanctions, like maybe over a 5-year period of time. They'll want to string it out. And of course, what Obama and also Kerry had said early on, you know, Just because we've taken these sanctions off now, we can put them back. So it's, you know, we haven't agreed to, like, and even if we do take them off, that doesn't mean we can't put them back later down the road if we have some another reason to do so. So that's what they tried to do to stifle the AIPAC lobby. But the Iranians have put another red line in the sand. They said, no, we're not going to go for any drawn-out multi-year sanctions removal. Either the sanctions come off or there's no deal. And that's going to the getting this nuclear deal done for Obama is going to be one of the signature accomplishments of his administration. So he's very, very heavily politically invested in this. He needs a success. The Iranians, Rouhani is very politically, invested in this because the conservatives, in Iran have been very suspicious that the Iran was just going to get jerked along or the West may try to schnooker him into a bad deal where they would negotiate Iran's conventional military. And then, of course, Europe. Their companies that need the business, they need all of the export business that they possibly can get. They really need this deal too. So, there's optimism in terms of, you know, everybody needs it. And of course, everybody has been saving something to negotiate and give up at the end. But, we all have our fingers crossed because that will really help to, calm things down in that region. And then I'm proposing right now is that once we get these Iran talks done, that maybe it's time that we initiate having some nuclear talks on U.S. peaceful use of nuclear weapons, starting with 9/11. And I think we should go into a multi-year public review. It's time for the U.S., Israel, all the countries that we know that have had secret or on-the-side nuclear programs. Iran has gone through the ringer, and I think we should just pick the ball up and say, who's next? And start really, really banging the drum that we want the same type of investigations and drawn-out negotiations to see to make sure everybody else's nuclear programs are peaceful like they say they are. We want to look into their shorts and see what they've really got there. And then, let's see, kind of we're getting near the end. A little interesting weapons technology, which we always run a few articles now and then. There's so much of this going on. We can't keep up with it all the time. But I found a really interesting item. The Chinese have come up with a laser air defense system for low-flying drones. And they said they have tested it. And it can acquire and shoot down a drone in 5 seconds. It's actually a laser. It's a laser gun. Now, mind you, it's not taking them down at 25,000 feet or anything like that. These are low-flying drones up to 500 meters. And their testing that they said, the last testing they did, they had 30 targets and they had 100% knockdown rate on all 30. So acquiring and they've got to have some really good radar to be able to pick up these small drones. And my lead in I put on it today, they left out of the race, is that these low-flying drones are a major terrorist threat. Because as we've talked about on VT, many nukes now can be made the size of a baseball or even smaller. And these things are very transportable. I don't really know what the weight is. I know they don't have a lead shell. They shouldn't be very heavy. But these things are very transportable on low-flying drones. And they're the type of thing that could be flown to a target and made it look like it was a terror attack. The some false flag type operator could do it. So, and this is really what they're developing this for, is for special events like the Olympics and whatever, to be able to spot low-flying drones and be able to shoot them down literally in 5 seconds. So that's really an amazing accomplishment. And, of course, the other thing that was unsaid in the story is have they got something that can get them higher and where they can start knocking down the bigger stuff. So background story here is these countries that are concentrating on defense, which is the Russian and the Chinese, they are going full scale to make sure they have ways to be able to knock down all superior offensive weapons that the U.S. has. And they're testing them out now. And although the U.S. started and led for quite a while in the drones, other people obviously are catching up. It's very affordable to them. They can be mass produced. You can bring out new versions fairly quickly, almost a year with improvements. So it's a technology that everyone's going to have. So. But that's kind of, we got 7:28, so I think I kind of hit my mark with a question left for Stu.
Well, if you've got anything more to add, go ahead, Jim.
Well, the other thing I wanted to do is I wanted to thank you guys. I saw the note about the numbers that the shows, the VT shows are pulling now. And, of course, you know, we've put in our little part. The main thing is it is the Stu Webb Show. You're the guy who's been in the trenches doing it for years and years. And as we end up coming to the end of 2014 here, the highlights of the year is that that we've been able to push the audience on these radio programs higher than any alternative radio station that I know doing it consistently. And with a... you know, just giving folks the band. We just saw it fairly on. I said there have to be people out there that want to know what's being withheld from them, what they're being lied to, why, and how they're going about it, because this is going to be a life's work. The people that are lying to us and conning us, they've made that a life's work. So we, unfortunately, have to always plan that we're going to have to keep an eye on this. It's like living in a neighborhood where you go online and you find out you've got child molestation in the neighborhood. You got to be aware and you got to be on guard all the time. And we're getting a lot stronger now because we're getting networked. We're having more and more people with special talents come in wanting to help us. So veterans today, people thought we were kidding with this on our master. We are the largest private intelligence network in the world in terms of the number of people we have, some of the highest defense and military people in some of the countries around the world, down to just a lot of volunteers who've been helping us. And the radio are being able to reach out and show people that this work has been validated with the radio numbers. So we want to thank you for that. And I want to tell the listeners, we're going to try to keep bringing it to you because we've worked years to get to the point, and we ain't about to slow down or quit now.
We're not. We're just starting, Jim, and it's all of us combined at Veterans Today and yourself and everybody. That's what the listeners want to listen to. They want to listen to the truth. They want to know what's going on. And I thank you for everything you do for veterans today and for this country. And is there anything else that you want to add?
Good. Well, we're hoping to, we've had a play. We've been trying to get out to a counterterrorism conference in Damascus. They always have difficulty in getting those finalized. So we had an 11th date at first, and now it looks like it's going to be get pushed back to the 20th, which is about 11 more days. So we're still waiting confirmation on that. But if that comes, we're going to have the 18, four of us from VT, go to Damascus for that, and then we try to stay several extra days. And we are going to be reporting on the scene live from Damascus. If everything goes well. Hopefully we'll know by the weekend.
Well, that's great. And I refer to you as Ambassador James Dean, Syria, because you were the only one invited by the Syrian government to come over from America's press, media.
Actually, we had 10. I was the only one from VT. They had 10 from the U.S., 3 from Canada. So from our hemisphere, we had 13. They had about, I think it was 32 total batch from about 3 from England, Europe, easier, a couple from Indonesia, a couple from Africa. But they only had 30, I think it was 31 or 32 monitors to come in. So it was a very interesting trip. There is no substitution for actually being there. And it's the first time I've carted around in an armored limousine with a car with 4 AK-40s back in 47s in the front, another car with another 4 in the back. And we never went anywhere without just a pile of security, because they wanted to make sure nothing happened. Because that city, you could hear the shelling. They had the windows open in June. And while you were working on the computer, you could hear the shells coming on in the outskirts. There wasn't anything coming in downtown. But everybody was so used to that, they just carried on. And after about 2 days, people said, oh, you're used to it. After a couple of days. And it got to where by the third day, you just didn't even pay any attention to it.
Interesting. Well, Jim, thank you very much for your report this evening. And we've got Dr. Preston James and Gene Tatum going to make their reports. And I want to thank you, sir, for coming on. And we'll have you on tomorrow night or tomorrow.
Good luck. You guys have a good show.
Thank you, sir. And with that said, ladies and gentlemen, before I bring on Dr. Preston James and Gene Chip Tatum, I would just like to tell you that this station is listener-supported radio, and I'd ask for you to make a contribution. Go to the contribution button and make a contribution of $1, $5, or whatever you can do per month, $10, $100, whatever, to keep this show and other shows on this network. Now, we did break records. Apparently, we've doubled up broke records tonight on the number of hits. Number of listeners. Many listeners had to be turned away. There are new computers that have been acquired, so we're going to have that fixed in the future. Nighthawk's working on that now. He did get a donation a week ago that will take care of that problem. So we're going to be able to take up to millions show. And with that said, Dr. Preston James, Gene Chip Tatum, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Stu.
Doc, great to hear from you. Gene, are you on with us?
Hey, Stu. Hi, Doc. Good to be on with y'all.
Hey, I'm going to let it run because, Gene, you got a problem. And I need a cup of coffee. And I'm going to let Doc play host here and jump in and open mic. And I want you to tell your story. What's going on, Gene? You need help. You need help immediately by the American people. I mean, tonight, tomorrow. You need help. So I want you to tell them what's going on. And I'm getting a cup of coffee.
Okay, Stu. Okay. Well, folks, as many of you might have heard, I have been charged with criminal...
Gene, your mic's not working, buddy.
Hello?
Yeah,
hello.
There you go.
I was charged criminally with driving under the influence in the state of Florida. Today.
You're in and out, Gene. Before I leave you for a cup of coffee, I've got to make sure your mic's working.
How's this working?
That's working better. There you
go. Today, to bring everyone up on my court case, we met, and apparently the prosecutors, you know, in our case, you know, we see on TV all the police cars are armed with their webcams, so anything that happens on the street is recorded. And in my case, they actually do have recording devices in the cars. So we ask for disclosure for the court case that we intend on going forward with. And, you know, the deputy forgot to turn the camera on.
You were being followed. You were being stalked. You had a couple clowns stalking you, and you were trying to shake them, should we say.
And they called a deputy to back them up, whoever they were. We asked for disclosure. We wanted the names of the people who made a 911 call to this deputy. And, they can't seem to find that either. All they can say is this deputy showed up and he said that I seemed that, I was under the influence because I wouldn't close my eyes when he gave me a test that put my head back, closed my eyes, put my fingers to my nose. And he said, close your eyes. And I said, oh, hell no, I'm not closing my eyes. You got a big gun and I don't have anything. I'm keeping an eye on you. And that kind of rubbed them the wrong way. But, you know, with everything that goes on, look, I know what we do with these deputies. I did it in the past and now it's come around full circle. We used to hire these guys. We'd go in with our badges, with our cards and hire them to block off roads in South Florida for us. And it was the easiest thing in the world to do. We could get them to block roads for us while we flew in aircraft, dropped off a load of whatever, whether it's sneaking people into the country, sneaking people out of the country. And this was usually done down near the Everglades on some of the wonderful dark back roads over there. And they were more than happy to work for us. And so I have no doubt that someone got a hold of this guy and they were working for us. The one thing that they don't want is they don't want me to complete the writings that I'm doing on Jeb Bush and then the writings that I'm doing on Hillary Clinton. Last week, early this week, I should say, early last week, I released the first part of George and the Boys, My Three Sons Plus One. And I talked a little bit about his first two sons, George W. Bush. And John Ellis Bush, and I tied John Ellis to the crime syndicates that are here, to the mafia, and even today we heard about the mafia control of the Republican Party. It's there, it's absolutely there, and we have to be aware of it. In the next edition coming out, I'll talk more about John Ellis, Jeb Bush, and I'll bring in Neil and Marvin. Marvin, folks, you haven't heard much about. They've kept him out of the limelight. Silent but deadly. Silent but deadly is Marvin's position. And so I hope to be around, to finish that and get it out, into the limelight. But I want to do it with the correct timing. The second edition of this, I want to do, after Jeb is in the race and running so that it's, in the military, we call it firing for effect, folks. I need to make this fire for effect because it's pretty powerful what's going to come. And then when Billary comes out to do her thing, I've got some juicy stuff on that one, including Secret Service, one of her Secret Service officers, an interview and some statements by her. Wonderful, wonderful show that'll be. And I'll break that right on this show, Stu. Doc?
Great. And Doc, you there?
Yes, I'd like, Gene, would you please explain to us about your legal defense fund? And, you know, everybody's poor right now. People are having a hard time making, but if everybody could chip in $5 or $10, whatever they can chip in, that would push it over the edge. Could you explain people where they can help you and how to do it?
Sure. Folks, what's happened was I have to get an attorney. And coming back into the U.S. and getting my son legalized took almost all of my funds. I do have some, and I was able to pay the attorney some to represent me. But if I can't get him paid off, then I have to go with a public pretender. And he does not want to go to trial. He said today in our meeting, I'm not going to take this to trial. I said, well, what do you mean you're not going to take it to trial? They don't have anything. But he said, well, you know, we've not gone through with a DUI trial here. It's just not something that we care to do here in this county. I've contacted and paid mostly paid off a private attorney, but he needs a little more just to secure his position so he doesn't come in and represent me and then have to back out because he wasn't paid. So I'm asking for a little help. I'm almost over the top now. It'll take a couple thousand more dollars and he'll be paid off. The attempt with him is to be able to bring all of these people, all of the cabals who I worked for into this. Because when I was being followed and they pulled me over and they asked me why I was, why I made the turns that I did. I said, because someone was following me. I made a turn without a signal.